The court calls United States versus Norwood. Counsel.
May it please the court, Major Jeff Liebman for the appellant, First Sergeant Benny Norwood. With the court's permission, I can reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Granted.
The specifications here are defective because they don't allege that the appellant attempted or conspired to do anything illegal under the code. And we reach that conclusion in this way. The appellant was charged with attempted adultery, but without the criminal element. In Fossler, this court said that adultery standing alone without the criminal element is not criminal. As a result, here, there was no allegation that the appellant attempted to do anything that was criminal. And this reasoning really applies in the same way to the conspiracy charge. And while these are inchoate offenses, an inchoate offense must still at least allege the essential elements that make the underlying offense criminal. And here that just wasn't done. The deeper issue here is really not whether there's a defect, but it's the prejudice analysis under United States versus Balan, in our opinion. And in Balan, what this court said is that it does matter in a guilty plea context whether or not the accused admits that his conduct was criminal because it sprang from Clause 1 or from Clause 2. In Balan, this court found there was no material prejudice because of the defect, because Balan actually said that his conduct, the sex acts there, were service discredited. Here we don't have that. The military judge never asked, First Sergeant, when you went into that room with the PFC, did you specifically intend to discredit the Marine Corps? Did you specifically intend to wreak havoc upon the morale or good order discipline the unit? And therefore, he never gave that up. And that's the defect, or the prejudice analysis from our perspective in this case.
What are you relying on for your argument that you need to specifically intend to discredit or undermine good order discipline as opposed to a specifically intended to commit the overt act?
Well, the military judge first instructed the appellant that because this was a specific intent crime, that he did need to specifically intend every element of the offense. So we start there, Your Honor.
Is that a correct statement of the law?
I believe so, yes, Your Honor. Because if not, then we just have specific intent to do the act, that is the adultery aspect, but a general intent of the consequences. And we just really fall into a general intent crime. That is, I specifically intended the adultery, but I didn't intend to discredit the service or
do you have to intend to discredit the service under 134 discredit, or does it have to have a tendency? This is a separate issue, but you're turning it into a specific intent.
If you're being just charged with a straight clause 1 or 2 offense, Your Honor, we agree. You know, it doesn't have to have specific intent. It's whether it would or did. Excuse me, whether there's a tendency to be discrediting or actually was prejudicial. But here it's an attempt crime. We're never going to reach that. So when he went into the room, to be criminal. That is, a specific intent crime, attempt, has both the act, but there's the evil mind aspect. And that's important, is what the government really missed here. Had they recognized it.
But your central argument is that
the central argument,
the parent wasn't an offense,
yes, Your Honor,
in your view of Fosler, then he could not have intended to violate a offense under the code.
That's correct.
Independent of his bit about whether you specifically intend to discredit or not.
We think he could have a specific intent, Your Honor. It's possible. I think here, though, it would be intellectually dishonest for the government to say, had the military judge asked this question, First Sergeant, when you went into the room, I understand you specifically intended to commit adultery. Did you also specifically intend to make the Marine Corps look bad? The answer would have been no, and that's why Balan is so important. The reasoning behind Balan really springs from the caring.
I'm still looking for the authority that you're relying on, that the specific intent necessary for an inchoate offense has to be shown for every element of the subject target offense.
Well, I don't have any case law on top of my head. We really relied on the military judge being accurate. The government didn't say in its brief that he was inaccurate when he said that you had to have specific intent for each element. And what we're talking about, we talk about two elements here. There's not a lot of them. There's the act, and we agree that there was a specific intent to go into the room with the PFC and commit the adultery. But 134, the crux of it is not the act. It's important because you need to be on notice of what the act was. But the crux of it is, the criminal aspect of it is, the prejudice or service discredited. Otherwise, what we end up with is a chart or a principle of this. I attempted to go into the room with the PFC and commit adultery, and that might have been criminal under the circumstances. That doesn't work. And the government didn't write.
Is it your theory that no Article 134 offense can be confirmed because with absent the Clause 1 or Clause 2, it doesn't state a criminal offense?
Charge under Clause 3, Your Honor.
Okay. No, but I'm saying that if Clause 1, Clause 2, or Clause 3 aren't there under Article 134, that we can't affirm them under any circumstances because they don't allege offense. Or is there something particular about these offenses that your argument rests upon?
Well, I take your question. First, there would always be a defect if that third one of the clauses isn't in there, if you just have the act. But in Balan, there was a shift where we're not testing for prejudice. So in that sense, each case is going to differ. So I don't know. I certainly think, yes, there could be.
I thought what your initial argument was that because the terminal elements are missing,
yes,
that it doesn't state offense under the code, and therefore
right.
It couldn't have attempted to commit an offense under the code, and therefore it doesn't state an offense at all, and therefore you win. And so I'm asking you take the attempt out, and we're just leaving the Article 134 offense with the same defect, and it seems to me that you're saying, or the logical implication of what you're saying is that they too would fail to state a criminal an offense under the code and could never be affirmed. Those convictions could never be affirmed.
No, that's not our position. I think we can always.
Okay, well, explain to me how your position can be accurate and be what I see as a logical.
Honestly, I'm not sure I understand the question, because to me that there's just a two-part test. Is there a defective specification? It's defective, it's because we're using the word defect here. Maybe the better word to use is, or phrase to use is, doesn't state an offense. And in the past, that was a structural error. Now it's not. Now we're going to test for prejudice. And so the question is, our position is it doesn't state an offense. Was that defect cured by the colloquy between the military judge and the responses elicited from the accused? Here we say no. That is the Milan prejudice analysis.
Okay, so explain. Because I thought you started by saying that the reason that you win is because the specification here doesn't state an offense under the code.
No, the reason we win is because it doesn't state an offense under the code, and the defect wasn't cured by the colloquy between the military judge.
The military judge did not describe any terminal element of Article 134 to him?
Not in a meaningful way, but yes, he did. The short answer is yes.
How was the CCA wrong when it said that the providence inquiries in this case were adequate?
How is it wrong? Because under United States versus Terry, Your Honor, mere questions that draw conclusory responses is not enough to satisfy care. And here what happened, and we're going off topic, I think, but I mean, my argument is going off topic, but in terms of answering your question, that's all that happened here. And this is what we argued below. And we did stop at the court, and the court went with these issues. But the military judge simply said, I described all those elements from here. And recall from the record, the entire plea colloquy is about adultery and obstruction, because in the government's mind, that is the crime. And then he says, now I described the terminal element for adultery and obstruction, and he simply asks this question. Do you agree that you attempted to do all those elements as I listed for you? That, I think, is a problem just with the plea colloquy. But specifically, in terms of Balan, it doesn't go far enough, because in Balan, the court said it's important to know which theory the conduct causes the conduct to be criminal. And to put it differently, the act in Balan was a sexual act. The accused said that it was criminal because it was served as credit. Here the act is attempted adultery. The question is, which this court can't answer, is why did the accused believe that it was criminal? Was it because service was credit or prejudice? We don't know, because the judge didn't ask, and therefore he didn't answer the question. No further questions, that concludes my argument this time.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'm Colonel Kirk Baker, along with Lieutenant Joe Boyer. I represent the United States. This court should affirm the lower court and affirm these specifications for three reasons. One, this court, joined by a majority of federal circuits, has held that an inchoate offense specification does not need to allege each essential element of the underlying substantive offense. Second, applying that here, these specifications did not need to allege the terminal element of Article 134 because they were not for violations of Article 134. They were for attempt and conspiracy to commit adultery and obstructing justice, which are offenses under the code. And finally, at any rate, appellant under a plain error standard cannot demonstrate prejudice. Turning first to that first issue, which is the court's second granted issue, appellant starts with a false premise that these specifications need to state all essential elements of the target offense. That's not true. This court held in United States versus Bryant over 20 years ago the opposite. In that case, it was a conspiracy to distribute drugs. The specification omitted an essential element of distribution, the second element, that it must be wrongful, and yet this court found it sufficient. That decision is supported by a lopsided majority of federal circuits. That continues to be the law today.
How do you deal, or do you need to deal with Resendez-Ponce? How do you deal with Brian? Or do you think Resendez-Ponce has, I mean, I don't know if that's how you say it, has any bearing on whether Bryant remains good law?
Resendez-Ponce, Your Honor, is how I say it. I don't know if that's right either. But I believe that actually only supports the difference between inchoate offenses and underlying substantive offenses. And in Resendez-Ponce, the Supreme Court said attempt imports special meaning under criminal law, and it imports an intent to commit a criminal offense, and it imports a substantial step. And in Resendez-Ponce, the Supreme Court said you don't even need to state the substantial step, which these specifications do very clearly. It goes through the substantial step. So we think that only supports the Supreme Court's continuing to treat, even in light of more recent cases, continuing to treat inchoate offenses differently. This is the right rule. Inchoate offenses are different from the underlying completed offense. The gist, as the Supreme Court has said over and over again, is in the agreement or in the attempt. It's not in what would have occurred if the offense had been completed.
Would you agree?
Yes, Your Honor.
Would you agree you cannot attempt a lawful adultery?
I'm sorry, sir, I didn't hear that.
I mean, adultery is not always criminal in the military, is it?
That's correct.
So to say you attempted to commit adultery doesn't allege anything, does it?
Well, it does, but let me clarify this. That brings us to a very critical point here. Is adultery standing alone not an offense, as this court said in Fosler, or is adultery an offense under the code? Which is it? The answer is both. Even the MCM says adultery, act of adultery, standing alone is not an offense. This military judge explained that very clearly to the appellant. Adultery, the act of adultery, standing alone is not an offense. But it's that word, act. In Fosler, this court was talking about an act of adultery. And if I could put it into an equation, it would look like this, as this court said in Fosler. An act of adultery plus prejudice to good order and discipline or service discredited conduct equals the crime of adultery. This court, in all of its Article 134 jurisprudence, has been careful not to attack 134 itself or the fact that there can be offenses under Article 134 or the underpinning of Parker v. Levy, which says that Article 134 is extremely broad, but that's made specific. There are specific offenses that Congress intended to incorporate into the code through Article 134. These are offenses. This court's been very clear about that.
So carry your argument to a logical conclusion. You could attempt to commit an Article 134 adultery, even though the government might not be able to prove it's a 134 adultery. They could prove you had the sexual intercourse with a woman, not your wife, or whatever the allegation is, but they might not be having any proof that it was service discredit.
Exactly.
But you
right.
could be still attempting to service discredit somebody.
I think I'm in complete agreement with you, Your Honor. In other words, if this had said he attempted to have sexual intercourse with Bozick, he attempted to have sexual intercourse with a woman, not his wife, and that's all it said. That then, now you're stating something that doesn't necessarily state the offense of adultery. But this specification didn't say that. Percentage pumps. It said he attempted to commit. That imports he attempted to commit a crime. And we were talking about the crime of adultery under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, or in this conspiracy specification, he conspired with another to commit an offense under the code, to wit, obstructing justice. So not the act of obstructing justice, but the crime under the code.
Yeah. And he could be guilty of obstructing justice even if the investigation proved that the adultery was not a criminal type of adultery, could he not? By lying, making false official statements,
yes,
getting his buddies to lie about whether he was there and all that sort of stuff.
That's correct, Your Honor. Still could have certainly conspired to and ultimately could have obstructed justice whether or not the allegations were true.
Counsel, you don't disagree, though, that if, for example, the province inquiry, in the course of the province inquiry, when the military judge asked him about whether, you know, basically, do you agree that your conduct was service discrediting or prejudicial to good order and discipline? And he said, no, I disagree that they were either of those things. It wasn't service discrediting because, but for the fact that someone burst into my room, no one would have ever known. And it wasn't someone that had any relation to any of my shipmates, and so it had no impact on good order and discipline within my unit because no one cared. It was just, you know, some lady out of town. If you don't disagree, then under those facts that the province inquiry would be deficient and that it would be legally insufficient as a matter of law, that you can't be guilty of attempting to do something that in itself is not a crime.
That's correct. And that would be either, you know, legally insufficient evidence or a contested case, or in this case it would be an improvident plea if he in fact didn't admit to that terminal element. That is an element.
But that's a different question than whether this specification alleges the elements of an attempt.
It is. We would still argue that this specification states an offense or stated an offense in that hypothetical, but in that case there would be a problem with the province inquiry. Here we don't have that. I mean, here the military judge took pains to explain. He didn't just, it wasn't cursory. He explained in detail what it was, some acts of adultery that may meet that element, what might not. And then he asked the appellant, did you intend to do all those things? And he testified that he did. There's nothing in the record that is in substantial conflict with that he intended to. So that's what he swore to, is that he intended to.
Do you agree then that this isn't even a Fosler case at all? It's just a basic inchoate offense?
Exactly right, Ron. This is not Fosler. This is Bryant. You know, it didn't need to state that terminal element. It doesn't need to trot out those elements. And here, that's correct, you know, with the colloquy before about whether he even needed to specifically intend it. We certainly have never conceded in our brief or otherwise that's required, that he specifically intend that. We think that's actually not necessarily required. That's one way that an attempt can be shown if he intended it. But the case of United States versus Fiola, we cite it in our brief really for other purposes, but it talks to when there is no mens rea of requirement for one of the elements, then a conspiracy to commit that offense or an attempt has no mens rea requirement either. We believe that's applicable here. Now, it's not raised here because in the plea inquiry, he admitted that he intended all the elements. But that's another reason why it doesn't even need to go into that charge sheet, because this didn't need to be prejudicial to good order and discipline or of a service discrediting nature. It just needed to be that there was a substantial step toward a crime that would have been that if it had been completed. So it would be just nothing but awkward to put that into a charge sheet. Because even putting which conduct would have been prejudicial to good order and discipline wouldn't entirely be accurate. If he intended it, even if there was a factual impossibility, that it would still be an attempt. The key is that the elements of attempt and the elements of conspiracy are on that charge sheet. They are. They're on that charge sheet. So there was no error in this case. And moving beyond that, even if we were to assume a defect in one or both of these specifications, there is no prejudice, and the error cannot be the prejudice. So even if we assume that error, what is the prejudice to appellant? In this case, defense had a theme in this case where he was pointing to his responsibility, his acceptance of responsibility, and that what he did that night was criminal. And that's how his counsel categorized it, for what he pled guilty to. He attempted to set that apart from the offenses he pled not guilty to. Partially successful theme and theory of the case. Furthermore, he received actual notice in this case. If he didn't have notice already what the crime of adultery meant, the military judge explained it to him in detail. He acknowledged he understood it. He pled guilty to it. Furthermore, even in his own Providence inquiry, he apologizes to members of the command for the harm he caused them, which is prejudice to order and discipline, and for what he did looking bad upon the Marine Corps, which is service discredit. So he touches on both elements and goes beyond what's required for an attempt in a conspiracy and says that it actually caused prejudice to order and discipline and service discredit. That's abundantly clear in this record, that there was prejudice and that there was service discredit and conduct, and that goes toward whether there's prejudice as well. The evidence in this case, a Marine First Sergeant attempting to have intercourse with a PFC under his command, with two other members of the chain of command there present with him, conspiring with two junior people to obstruct justice, the terminal element is so abundantly clear there that there cannot be prejudice. Overwhelming evidence can overcome any allegation of prejudice in this case. If there are no further questions, I'll conclude. This was an inchoate offense case. These are inchoate offense specifications. They are the standard is the Bryant standard that's applied to these, not the Fosler standard. So there was no error, and there was no prejudice in this case, and therefore this court should affirm.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel to the appellant.
The government says that the key is that it would have been prejudicial or service discrediting. If that's the principle applied, it's a new one because it's not found in the case law, and it doesn't treat 134 in its proper context. That is, it doesn't recognize the uniqueness of Article 134. The government goes through a litany of examples in its brief: attempted murder, conspiracy to commit perjury, attempted larceny, burglary, and so forth. And there, all of those underlying offenses, burglary, murder, larceny, perjury, on their face scream out criminality, that they are in and of themselves. Statutes cover them as criminal conduct. The government is absolutely wrong when it says that Congress intended to punish adultery and obstruction of justice. If it had, there'd be a separate statute. There's one Article 134 statute. It punishes conduct which is prejudicial or conduct which is service discrediting.
That doesn't address the threshold argument that you need to make and convince us of, which is that an inchoate offense needs to allege all the elements of the target offense.
Well, Your Honor, we actually backed off that proposition in our reply brief attack. That is Wong Tang, Bryant, Bedford, the 4th, 5th, and 10th Circuit Court cases all stand for the proposition. If you don't have to go into the particularities of every underlying element of the offense, so be it. But that's for murder, larceny, perjury, and therefore, which all say are all on their face criminal. And they all have a bunch of elements, generally speaking. Here we're talking about two elements. We're talking about the act and the thing that makes it criminal. By the government's argument, they could just throw on there that he attempted to eat ice cream. Now, in some circumstances,
I don't think that's a fair characterization of the government's argument, counsel.
Well, Congress no more intended to punish attempted eating of ice cream, which could be criminal, Your Honor, than it intended to punish adultery in this statute. And the defect here, I see I'm almost out of time.
You are out of time, but you may continue.
Well, the defect here, I think, is plain. We actually didn't anticipate that there would be much of a contest there. It just says attempted adultery. There's no criminal language in there. What it puts the accused on notice of is the wrong thing. The committing adultery is in and of itself a crime, which it has not been up until the lower court's opinion here. No further questions, that concludes my argument.
Thank you, counsel. We thank both counsel. Before recessing, I would like to take this opportunity to thank Senior Judge Cox for joining us this season and helping us fill out the bench. You've done so with great grace and humor, even though it's disrupted your schedule. So we're very appreciative for your willingness to come back and sit with us. Thank you, counsel. The court stands in recess until further order of the court.
Thank you.